Namaste. So, the question is about International Day of Conscience. You know, these days, first of all, do make me feel strange. Means one day conscience and all the rest. 364 days without conscience. But, well, it's in a way, it's an interesting subject. Interesting for those who have a conscience. Because they often feel, I'm a man with conscience, you know. But if you look at the world and the action of the divine in the world, you would end up believing that the divine doesn't have a conscience for sure. Look at nature. Does nature have a conscience? What is conscience? Conscience is a construct about what is good and what is bad, what is right and what is wrong. Isn't it? When nature, suddenly you see a tsunami had come here, to take an example. Who were the people who suffered outwardly the most? The poor fishermen who had their hurts, no fault of theirs. Actually, if you see, they were the ones who were going to sea. They worshipped the sea, by the way, regularly. It's their regular thing. You know, they have sea festivals, they have sea pujas, because it's a god for them. They were destroyed. What about the politicians, rich and famous and ugly politicians? They didn't die. In fact, they capitalized on it. They took a lot of money to build huts, which they made some makeshift things. So if you look at nature and don't understand the wisdom that is working in the heart of nature, you will feel nature doesn't act with a conscience. And it is true, nature doesn't act with a conscience, but nature acts with the wisdom. We must know the difference between wisdom and conscience. And when this tsunami had come, to take this example, so some people naturally, a lot of questions. People are very happy in Pondicherry. Ashram was saved and all this. So, you know, sometimes it can be very insensitive also. While it's beautiful, yes, we all believe in grace and it's so wonderful that. But then you also feel that 15 kilometers there, 10 kilometers there, people were devastated. So you can't just say divine just, you know, protected you. While it is true and wonderful. But we must understand that all around was devastation. The divine is not limited to one space. Unka bhi divine hai, matlab, in whatever way. So we have to understand that nature doesn't work. I am not coming to why some people are saved more and some are not. But during that phase, I had written an article on this also. And there was a poem of Sri Aurobindo which I had read, which is called The Lost Boat. Not the dream boat, the lost boat. And there he describes that there is a sea tide, the boat is going on it, and suddenly it vanishes. Why? Because it has been taken, capsized in the sea. You know that aphorism of Sri Aurobindo? That providence is not only when you are saved, when all the rest have drowned in a boat capsized. You say, ah, God's grace, I am saved. Again, it can sound very rude and insensitive. Providence is also that when the last straw is snatched away from you, whereas all the others are saved. And there are a series of aphorisms on that. Another place he says, Sir Philip Sidney said, Sir Philip Sidney is, you know, he's seeing somebody going to the gallows, taken to the gallows. So he believes in God. And he says, but for the grace of God, it is Sir Philip Sidney who would have gone to the gallows. And Sri Aurobindo says, better if he said, for the grace of God. The effect is the same, that even if you go to the gallows, it is the grace of God. Sri Aurobindo himself, in his previous incarnation as Danton, he went for the guillotine, no? So, Joan of Arc. So, he describes the lost boat. He says, we see an event in a point of time that somebody is destroyed and we don't see what is happening thereafter. Where has this person gone? Has he gone to new lands in a better state? Here, those who survived got the ragtag huts where politicians may have taken a lot of money. Or not, whatever it is. But Those who went away, we don't know, maybe one of them was born in a rich household. How do we know? So when we look at life from that angle, then we discover that nature doesn't act. Now we may say, oh, so nice of him. No. We don't know whether a person born in a rich household lost the opportunity of turning to the divine, and those who have survived the Holocaust suddenly turned to the divine. We don't know. So once we understand this, then we understand that truly we don't know. Because you see, moralist interpretation of life is very dangerous. Morals are required. I'll come to that. But moralist understanding of life will lead you to many kinds of cul-de-sacs where you don't know further. That's how people say, no, why this happened in the life of a good human being? Why is he suffering? So at the end of the day, they say, no, it's not God. He's a good guy. Your karmas. See, somewhere in your account it is written, you are a bad guy in that life, so you are suffering. You have nothing, to do. So we have painted a moralist God who is busy noting down in a register good and bad. So because we believe that, everything should be moral. That's why it hits very hard to many people to see that this world is not moral. It is not immoral either. It is amoral. Nature is amoral. What about God? He is supramoral. See, that is the Arjuna's dilemma, no? Moral and ethical man is recoiling. You are asking me, sir. Clearly you are saying something which Gandhiji, who believed in conscience, says no. I know, I have read complete works. You are not supposed to take an arrow. And there are ahimsa, paramo, dharma. How can I shoot an arrow? I am doing a great sin and you are asking me to commit sin. How can you be God? But Sri Krishna tells him precisely that which the moral sense of man abhors. The Gita starts from there. Even Lord Rama, if you look at his life, people quote him as the paragon of sattvic virtue, which of course he is a illumined man. But even he does things which outwardly you cannot explain purely on the moral grounds. So what we have to understand, morality and conscience is a temporary construct, a passage needed for man, like reason. God doesn't act according to reason as we understand. If we had to rationally plan the world, think about it, how we will plan. Our reach will be, all people should be happy, first thing. Second, all should be rich. Wonderful. Everybody is rich and happy. That Bruce Almighty, half an hour. And then what happens? You have created a material paradise. But what happens when all are rich and all are happy? There is no progress. You will never conceive that there should be divine perfection, because your idea of perfection is this. If all are rich, all are happy, people don't fight, there are no wars. And okay, the body will live forever. Let's add that to the clause. So what happens? You have created a paradise. Gods are like that. Except that their bodies are of a different make. But there is no progress. So gods want to take a human body. Where is the limit of progress? Divine perfection. We have to become like divine. So the wisdom that operates in nature operates only on one principle, and that is progress towards the divine becoming. That's the purpose. But human being, so it's suprarational. It's intuitive. If you seek creation, it is very intuitive. If you look at creation, you can't imagine. It's mind-boggling, the cycle of nature. The rhythms, the interconnectedness of species, the way they've evolved. As Shubhendu puts it, casual footfalls and you have wonderful flowers that arise. Even if a painter wants to paint with the mind, including the computer, number of colors, you can't imagine the way the colors are blended in nature. It's just unimaginable. And think about it. It happens casually. As if somebody just prayed. It's not with reason. Shubhendu says in Savitri, it's not with reason that this world was built. Nor even by chance. This world was not built with random bricks of chance. So there is a wisdom. But till we arrive at that wisdom, we have to have an operating system. Workable operating system. So between animal and the Superman, the operating system is reason and conscience. Reason is the mind decides what you should do and what you shouldn't do based on your rational understanding of life. Why? On the basis of reason, you can say that people should be good, whether God is there or not. Why? Because it's in our benefit. If we are good, if everybody is good, then it'll be good. Good place. So goodness has a basis in reason, not necessarily in a deeper sense. At the same time, you have to be moral in life. Don't do harm to somebody else. Don't, you know, hurt anyone. Also because it's rational also. If you hurt somebody, tomorrow he is going to take out, you hurt with a dagger, he'll take out a sword. There'll be chaos. So reason and morality are constructs of the mind. They prevent the society from degrading into animal kind. So it is a temporary necessity to purify our being to an extent, to discipline the untamed vital. The moment you say, oh, God is not moral, he is beyond good and evil. Oh, wonderful. So I am God. Next you apply and you know, all of us are God. Now imagine, what a dangerous weapon you have armed a person with. The devil will say, now I don't need to do anything else. Just teach them these two mantras. All is God. Soham Asmi. I am God. And also say that, tell them that he is beyond good and evil. Two things you teach people. And see, now I am at peace because people will do my work thinking they are doing God. So, till wisdom comes, we have to operate through morality and conscience. But conscience is a mental construct. It's not the voice of the soul. The voice of the soul, which is the only true guide, may tell you, it doesn't tell like this, do this, don't do this. That's how morality works. But what does the soul do? It just gently tells, okay, this. And you may choose something which is neither rational nor moral. It's not rational because it may mean you may incur loss. Loss of maybe prestige, loss of this, loss of that, money. And is not even moral. Because from the moral standards, it is not acceptable. I want to take an example. There are examples. Draupadi marrying 5 husbands. Is it moral? No. Even during those times. That's the logic that Kauravas gave. Is it rational? No, it complicates life. And yet it is wise. So Krishna and Kunti, between them, whatever Shri Krishna conspired or inspired her, baat lo. Aagyakari bachche baat liya. How do you, you know, baato a lady? But you know what happened as a result? The 5 brothers remained forever united. Draupadi was the fire who joined them together for the destruction of the Kauravas. That's the only thing that was required. And because of this act, which the Kauravas claimed to be immoral, she was called in to disrobe. They had to give some justification, no, for Bhishma and everybody to be quiet. And because of that one act, they further put the last nail on their coffin. So that's how wisdom operates. So wisdom doesn't operate. Wisdom operates on the principles of dharma, which is very different from morality. Dharma is what helps in the unfolding of the truth. Again, we take an example. Is Buddha's leaving the Shakya kingdom at the young age of 21, is it moral? No, certainly not. He doesn't know whether he'll get enlightenment or not. He is leaving his family and child. Poor fellows will suffer. Is it rational? Most irrational. Buddha was in normal life, in the thick of it. Just because you are seized with an impulse, try telling your parents, I feel like, you know, pursuing this yoga, and people will say, forget about it. Pehle jindagi, you know, that's how. So it's neither rational nor moral. But a deeper sense of the soul within Buddha made him do what he did, and the result is obvious. Take anybody's example. Did Sri Aurobindo and the mother's life, Is it moral and rational? See, people often have a misconception. So it's a good opportunity to clear that also, because recently somebody said, mother divorced two persons. Excuse me, she never divorced even a single person. The first marriage, the man went towards somebody else. And look at now, she set a new yardstick. It's documented in her play toward the future. She said, oh, I see you are in love with someone. All right, go ahead. I know for myself, don't worry, because I know that I will find joy and satisfaction of human love only in the divine. She documents in a prayer, no, there is a love that no human relation can appease. And then she blesses them, says, but my one request, puts their hand one into another and says, don't let it be animal. Let it be something more human and glorious. First marriage. Second marriage, consciously to convert the asura. He'll create chaos in the world. Let him be by my side. Let me convert him. If he gets converted, all others who feed by him will get converted. This is the work she had undertaken. Conversion of the asura. The more deadliest of asuras. Falsehood means whatever he is projecting is not that. That's how it is, falsehood. There also, she did not leave him. He left her and sent in the papers much later, because whatever remarriage and all that had to be done. So this to clarify. So if you look at her ways, was it moral? Moral person should have said no. Moral, neither legal nor rational. Imagine a lady from France, just look at it like that, comes all the way to India, going through Japan, and comes in 1920. You know, we are talking about 24th April. Is it rational to come and stay here forever? The rational thing is, go back, nice place, you have met, it's okay, you do. He is your Lord, everything. But look at the leap she has taken. It is neither rational nor moral. But her heart knew he is the one. That's the end of the story. So the real standpoint is the wisdom that speaks in the heart. And it doesn't take, I don't believe that you cannot know what is in your heart. It is just impossible. It is the moral notion which actually prevents us from knowing. And prevent from offering. Why? Because, no, how can it be so in my heart? No. I can't be so bad. But if you go deep inside your heart, you will see who is there at the center. Of course, those who have the divine, there is no problem. But I'm saying even humanly, deep inside, you will see that your heart, there is something which is there. And follow its voice, listen to its dictates. It is the divinity within us. It requires tremendous courage, tremendous courage. The heart will never say lie, and the heart will never tell you, oh, go enjoy life. It will never tell you that. I can tell you that is the vital passions. It will never mislead us saying, oh, such a beautiful person, run after. No, it will never tell you that. The heart will take you through the experiences which will purify you. That's all. And prepare you for the divine. Heart never misleads. The vital that misleads, that comes as a covering, puts a veil, and you think, oh, this is my heart. That's not your heart. It's the vital driven thing. And so when the veil is, when it collapses, then you say, what happened to my heart? You never consulted your heart. So heart never lies. Deep inside the heart, there is truth. The original script of the divine, the experiences you have to undergo, the path, the journey. It is, as Shubhendu says, the master clue. The key to all the cryptic shows in space. All the different phenomena. If you go here, you will see, understand everything about your life with clarity. Everything that seemed like a mistake, an error, or good, you'll see with clarity what is there behind it. And therefore, it becomes so much easier to progress further. Because it'll show us what is really needed. So that's how the heart operates. Conscience is a temporary mental construct. Morality is also a collective construct. Necessary when we are in thick of ignorance, when the vital nature is very active, when the animal in us is just ready to eat with its hunger everything, be moral. Be conscientious, but know that it is not divine. Seek the greater good, seek the greater truth, seek the wisdom that speaks to the heart when the mind falls quiet. What's that?